Hello and welcome to Rewatchable episode number 336. Today we're talking Pitch, episode 8, Unstoppable Forces and Immovable Objects. My name is Danielle and I'm going to be your host for today. But before we jump into anything, I want to remind you on how you can get in contact with us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. And you can come find us on Facebook. Our Facebook group is called Rewatchables Rewinders. Again, I'm Danielle and I'm your host for today. And I am joined by three of my very lovely co-hosts. We have Brittany, Ariana, and Kendra. Hello.
Hi.
So happy to have you guys here. And this week, like every week, we're going to start our episode with a round of fun facts so that people can get used to our voices. Kendra, would you like to go first again this week?
Sure. Something fun that I did this week. Some of my friends and I did a virtual murder mystery / escape room party. So you got this like PDF, I guess, from mymysteryparty.com or something. And it's like a full murder mystery party that you can do just like with your friends over Zoom. And it was like all the characters were based on pop culture characters. So like one of them was basically Dumbledore. One of them was Wednesday Addams. There was like Derek Zoolander, Edward Scissorhands, Willy Wonka. And then with those characters, you had to like solve a mystery and get out of a virtual escape room, kind of. But it was really fun. I recommend it.
That sounds really fun. And to do it over Zoom, I'm very intrigued.
Every time Kendra comes on, I feel like she's just having a much more fun quarantine than I am.
Even when it's not quarantine, she's like, yeah, I've made like these great like wooden accessories and did all this other stuff. I'm like, I didn't get off my couch. Like, I don't know how.
Gotta keep the demons away somehow. I can keep making wooden knives.
There you go. I love it. Brittany, what is your fun fact for this week?
So my fun fact is literally that I walked down my hallway and found some comfort today. So it's been very quiet in my town since the quarantine, and I didn't realize how much like ambient noise was missing. And so the restaurant, I live above like a bar and restaurant, and they have been closed since we went on lockdown. And this week they just opened for, you know, takeout. And I was walking down my hall and I felt like something oddly familiar, but I couldn't place what it was. It was just a very different feeling. And it was because you can hear, if you're in the back of my apartment, you can hear music from the restaurant normally. And I guess they had it just playing, you know, because the kitchens are on the second floor, which is like one floor below me. So I could hear the music that they were listening to. And it was just like, it's very like low and not intrusive, but it's that little piece of just a reminder of like normalcy. And it was just so nice. I just like sat or like stood in my hallway for a little bit being like, oh, right. Like this is something that's normal. And it felt very, very nice. And I'm happy that they're open and I can get food from them now. But yeah, it was just a little slice of normal life, which made it seem less that things are changing and slowly that things are starting to get back to normal, even if they definitely are not.
Yes, those things are always nice. I was noticing kind of the same thing walking down my street, just like how abandoned it is and how like there's not a lot of that ambient noise that's going on. So that's awesome that you got to hear some of that or got to experience some of that. Ariana, your fun fact for this week?
My fun fact, since I do nothing, is an update to a previous fun fact, and it's a Google Fit update. At the beginning, I was talking about I used Google Fit and realized that I don't walk at all, that I pretty much am just an immobile person who never moves. But I've started using Google Fit, and I've been upping my step count, and it's been really fun. And so for the past week, I've been getting my 10,000 steps in, and I'm just really proud of myself. But it's been really fun because I just walk in circles in my backyard, and I put on a podcast, and it feels like my me time. And it also feels like I have an excuse to just like zone out because I'm being productive and getting my steps in.
Yes.
Yeah, my life is terribly boring. I'm so sorry.
Your life is not terribly boring. And if it is, mine is right there with you. Because I have been struggling to think of what my fun fact is for this week. Have I mentioned on here before that my cat plays fetch? I don't know if I have or not.
No.
Okay. Then my fun fact for this week is that my cat plays fetch. She has I bought her a set of two, they're like fish tacos. I got them from Target and they make like that crinkly noise, and she loves her taco, and she will run around with it and then drop it by our feet, my roommate and I, and then we'll throw it and she'll run after it, grab it and bring it back. And she will play fetch with us for a very, very long time. And then when she's tired, she'll put it down and then she'll sit on it for a while until she's not tired anymore. And then she'll start all over again.
Your cat is truly like a dog.
She is a dog. I think she is a dog. She whimpers and like runs sometimes like a dog, or like is clumsy like a dog. She is very much a puppy, and it's very entertaining. And she knows that I'm talking about her because she's kind of looking at me. All right. Okay. So enough of our fun facts. Let's jump into this episode, because I obviously will be talking about this for however long this episode is for our podcast. But this episode is basically what I've been waiting for. And this is what I think of when I think of pitch, which is really interesting because it's not really about anything that pitch is about, but we'll get into it. So to start us off, Ariana wrote a recap for this episode, and it goes, in this bottle episode, it's raining on game day when Ginny's brother shows up to shake up San Diego. Meanwhile, Mike Lawson is cranky because the Padres are looking to trade him, but Ginny is unfazed by his tantrums. Her head's in the game. Later, when a fellow teammate confesses to his crush on Ginny, Mike tells on himself, and that he does. So like I was saying, this is the episode, or like these are the pieces of pitch that I kept waiting to happen this whole season. Namely, the Charlie, the front office guy, like being a complete asshole. Mike's hemming and hawing about going to the Cubs because I hate the Cubs, and also this aired the year that they played in the World Series and won the World Series. So he's basically hemming and hawing about being on a championship team that hasn't happened yet. And then most of all, Ginny's brother. Ginny's brother is someone that I kept waiting to come back this whole season, and I couldn't believe how late in the game that he came back.
I really felt like he was supposed to come much earlier. Like, yeah. In my brain, he's just such a big part of this season. Yes. This is episode 8.
Yeah, it's literally episode 8, and I think I remember something that happens in the next episode, but I kept thinking that he was going to be coming back. So I'm glad I'm not alone in that. The thing that I didn't remember were the flashbacks to what happened earlier in the season that we didn't see until now. And I think perhaps I was misremembering that those happened in real time. And that's why I thought he was around much longer. But newbies, how did you feel about seeing her brother again? And kind of what was your take on him?
I think I'm a little torn, but I feel a lot worse about him now than I did earlier. Like, it was sweet to see him watching all of her games and like really wanting to go. But when he actually came, when he was actually there, it just felt like everything he did was so selfish. And that seems very contrary to the character that I thought he was going to be when we saw him in the flashback. So I'm a little confused now.
Yeah, I was very disappointed in the direction that they decided to take his character. It really I was like, why are we doing this? Because I really did like him in that first episode. And I did think it was weird that he sort of, once Amelia showed up, he kind of took the cue to, you know, step back and let Ginny have this. And it was nice, like Kendra was saying, to see him being so supportive and wanting to watch her games. But he had that ulterior motive when he was there. And I think that's also probably why, you know, maybe Ginny wasn't asking about him or even talking about him with their mom or anything like that. And it was, I just did not like the direction that they took his character. I don't think it's just another thing to pile on Ginny, which, and this poor girl, what else can she handle, you know, in terms of not only family drama, but just, you know, stuff piled on regardless of their relation to her. It's just like drama, 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 drama.
Yeah, it is a lot of drama. With her brother, Will, I can kind of understand just because like his whole life had revolved around Ginny to that point, to the point of him kind of giving her over to Amelia, if you want to think of it that way. And so for any other person who is not Ginny and not dealing with everything that Ginny has dealt with, it would make sense to me that he would be so messed up in this way. Like his dad basically used him as bait in the pilot episode of like when they were kids. And like I said, his life very much revolved around Ginny for so long. And now that it's just him, he spiraled quite a bit. I will say that it's harder for me even to see her brother like this because the actor is someone who was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. around the same time that he was in this. And in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., he was a very lovable character. And so it made it hurt for me, at least in real time, to see him like this in this series. Ariana, watching this over again, I know you were saying, like me, you thought that it came sooner. How does his character play to you now that we're a few years removed from his original, like from when this series originally ran?
I like hate watching the brother scenes. They like hurt to watch. They're not fun, unlike most of the show, which does feel fun even when things are hard. And I think it might be just because like the brother's imperfections are so relatable and understandable. Like, I feel like we all have people that we know. Ginny obviously feels like she owes a lot to her brother, and you can tell her brother genuinely loves her and genuinely wants what's best for her, but he is just like not a fully functioning adult. Like, he doesn't know how to handle his own life, which, I mean, someone is going to have to pick up the pieces. And last time it was Amelia. And I think Ginny probably feels a responsibility to him because he has helped her so much. And she knows that if he could, he would do the same. But it has to be incredibly frustrating. And especially, like, I feel like Ginny is the star or whatever. But she's like the person who made it. And so she has the means to provide for people, so she wants to do that. But that means, like, some people are never going to learn to take care of themselves. But I don't know. I just feel like he reminds me a lot of just people that we know and love who are just, like, inept at being adults. So he's just really, he's frustrating to watch.
I think it's just confusing that they set him up in his first episode with such a selfless move. Like, Ginny wanted to take him with her, and he, for her, stepped aside and was like, this is what's best for you. So he started on such a strong note, and then introducing them in this episode, they did it in such a sinister way. Like, the first time we saw him, he had the black eye, and Amelia from minute one was against him, and it just kind of made us be against him. So it was a really big fall from where he started in the first episode we saw him, which I think didn't help me like him more in this episode or understand him more.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Like, he doesn't get really any redeemable qualities or any even like redeemable stories in this episode, at least that I can remember. It's all about his shortcomings as well.
You know
as
who
just,
he reminds me of?
Yeah. Who?
He reminds me of Rob Kardashian, you guys, because or, like in the broadest sense, like Rob Kardashian in Keeping Up with the Kardashians, like universe, let's say, is like, you can tell he loves his sisters and he loves his mom. And if he could, he would do like anything for them, but he just like does not have his head on straight. And so they're always having to bail him out of everything. And it's so frustrating, but they keep doing it over and over again because he's their brother. But you know, like, you're like, you know, he has a good heart. He doesn't like mean to be ruining everyone's lives, but he is. So that's what he reminds me of.
And he also probably has some sort of complex that's like, he doesn't want to admit he's in trouble until it's too far gone, to the point where like Amelia, like it's so big that Amelia has to write him a check for 20 grand just to get him out of Ginny's hair, or to the point where he's just like, no, like I can sweet talk my way into like procuring anything, and then once it starts to take off, like I just have no idea how to manage it, but I don't want to ask for help in the right areas because I want to seem like I have a grasp on everything I'm doing, because I don't want to be seen as being incompetent. So I think it's just, he doesn't want to, like, he's crippled by that. I don't want to ask for help, but I'm also really, really, really need it.
I was just going to say, I wonder if his asking for help or kind of owning up to that fact when it came to managing Ginny is where that sort of sense of failure comes from. Like, he did it once and he wants to be good at something, but he just keeps failing over and over again. Like, she was like the first step in that. I don't know.
I read this article and I forgot most of what the article said, but Entertainment Weekly did an interview with the writers of this episode specifically. I don't know why this episode, but they talked about how it was a bottle episode. And they also talked about, like, they talked a lot about how they had been talking in the room about what kind of man that Will grew up to be, because in the first episode, that slap is such a like jarring, huge deal, that they talked a lot about what kind of man he grew up to be and what his relationship was with Ginny. But there is that article out there.
That's interesting. And yeah, that's interesting that they chose this episode. I don't know. I think one of the things that sat the least well with me about him isn't really even about like his failures, or he's not going to go to a bank, he's going to find like private investors that he's going to owe money to and all that kind of stuff. I think it's getting other people involved. Like, he got Evelyn involved. And I think that because we're so invested in Evelyn, for me, that was one of the worst feelings, was just watching her get excited about things. We see her at the beginning of the episode talking with Amelia, and they're kind of discussing marketing sorts of things. And you can see a little glimpse of the good head that Evelyn has on her shoulders. And then we see her kind of fall in with Ginny's brother, who, as you were all saying, like, he's very much painted to be not a villain, but definitely not someone who's on the up and up. And I think it's the hardest thing to see her get involved. Did anyone else feel that way?
Yeah, the Evelyn part is hard, but honestly, a lot of that is on Evelyn, who should have seen. I mean, she's smart enough to know what she's seeing. But I think it is interesting. Like, just this time around, I saw that I think that they gave us a timeline for Evelyn in terms of that she went to USC for 2 years. And then if Kevin Brown's math turns out is correct, then she probably likely got pregnant and left. So she probably also has a similar like need to prove herself, and that she never got to have her own life and have her own career because Blips took over.
Right. And she can sort of treat this or pitch it as like an angle, like, you know, oh, we're helping out family almost. And, you know, it's something that she's excited about and she has some ideas, and you know, she knows the area, and it, she can picture herself involved immediately. And I agree. I think she's just looking for something that's bigger than what she has become. And she is smart. You know, we've seen that over and over again, not just with how she's able to manage everything that's going on in her family's life and, you know, having a husband that's on the road all the time, but just in the way she talks to Ginny and interacts with everyone around her. She's very, very intelligent.
The last thing that I want to touch on here in terms of Ginny's brother is the way in which Amelia handled things. Because I go back and forth. Like, I think it was a good decision to not burden Ginny with what was going on with her brother and kind of take care of it. But at the same time, it is her family. And so I go back and forth on whether or not it was for the best to keep it from Ginny at the moment, or even to continue keeping that secret from Ginny after, like, this is what, 3 months after, I think, that first game. So how did Amelia's handling land for any of you guys?
I thought she was finally doing the right thing and was like completely on point 100%. And in terms of meaning, like doing the right thing, being like, there was not a single misstep with anything she did in this episode. During current timeline, I don't know if necessarily paying him off in the past was above board, but I do think that everything she did game day, rain delay, was perfectly on point. And, you know, it's hard for Ginny to like see that line between, you know, well, this is my family and like you're part of the business, when it's actually her best interest spans across family and business lines. And this is a business decision, even though it is Ginny's money. She could do whatever she wants with it. But it is, I really appreciated Amelia being in the room this time and not getting the suite that she wanted to work in peace, where she had to be down in the trenches, and watching her work the trenches was kind of nice and refreshing.
It kind of makes me wonder how much Amelia and Ginny have talked about Ginny's relationship with her family, or how much Amelia just even gauged from meeting Ginny when her brother was her manager. I feel like she might know a lot more than we've seen her learn, and that might have kind of guided her decisions. I think I agree. It's a little dicey, but I think I agree that she did the right thing. Like, she didn't leave Ginny's brother out in the cold. Like, she helped him, and she knew that Ginny would have wanted to help him, so she kind of took care of it in every way possible.
I'm going to take an alternate route and say that while I 100% understand everything she did and feel like her heart was in the right place, I really think that she should have told Ginny earlier. Like, because obviously at some point she was going to find out. And so it would have sounded much better coming from her if she was able to, you know, upload it up front to her and say, like, this is what happened, rather than having her brother tell her so that she could get her side of the story. So in terms of that, I really feel like the smart move, Amelia, would have been to tell her much earlier. Though something that I thought was really interesting about this episode that I've always felt and that I kind of thought was interesting reading the writer's EW article, which again I don't remember a lot of, but they, at least one of the writers was Black, and they may have both been Black, and they talked about how they wanted to show like the family dynamics about how Black siblings interact and the like how they would take care of each other. And obviously I'm not Black, but something I have always noticed in this episode is how like Amelia comes off as like peak white woman, and how if you don't know the circumstances of what's going on, her superiority complex is just like so annoying. And like Evelyn's reaction to wanting to help Will, I almost felt like was a reaction to that, in Amelia coming off so strong being like just so dismissive of Will and so condescending that I feel like Evelyn was almost protective in a way that like I get like when a white woman is condescending to a person of color, I'm like, you are smart. You can do it. So not knowing the context, I do feel like Amelia comes off that way. Even in some ways, like talking to Evelyn, treating her like with kid gloves, because obviously she doesn't know that Evelyn is a very smart person who went to USC, but also Amelia just like kind of talks like that to everyone. So I just thought that that was an interesting thing about Amelia this episode.
Yeah, I didn't think about it like that, but there is sort of, like you were saying, Evelyn is not dumb. And so she's reading the room and she, I think, understands pretty clearly how Amelia feels about Will. And so I can definitely see a little bit of that in her interactions with Will. I think that's an interesting layer. Any other thoughts about Will? Obviously, he's still around, and I don't think it's a spoiler to say that he will be coming back again. So he will be someone to watch moving forward. But any last thoughts about him in this episode?
There's cool. Only two episodes left. What is he going to do? He's going to start his restaurant?
I don't know. I mean, he didn't technically leave. We see him with like a smug, maybe not smug, maybe that's not the right word, but we see him with a sort of like look of triumph or something on his face at the very end. Pride, I don't know. But he'll be around. And he has to be because I associate him apparently with this show far more than I should. So he's gonna, for my sake, he's got to be in more than one episode. All right, so let's back up all the way to the beginning of the episode. So it's raining in California, which doesn't happen very often, or so I'm told. Ariana, can you confirm or deny?
I can confirm.
You can confirm. Thank you. So it's raining, and we see Mike meeting his agent for breakfast before the game day. And basically they're having a conversation about that trade clause that we found out about, or the no trade clause and the fact that he was on waivers that we found out, I think is the last episode. And he basically says that he would leave the Padres the day a game was like rained out, and then it starts raining. And so we have this really interesting situation with Mike throughout the episode, kind of going back and forth on whether or not he should leave, whether or not he should stay, whether or not he's wanted there, or whether or not they are just going through formalities. And for me, I think that's a lot to deal with in just not even a single day. It was only a few hours, and also dealing with doing your job on top of everything. So I felt really bad for Mike in this episode and completely understand when he started lashing out. But the way in which Charlie wants Oscar to handle this is very not great. And we'll get to Charlie in a second. So like, does Mike handle this, all of this, in the best way he possibly can? Like, I don't know. How would you feel if you were going back and forth on your job or having these conversations while you were trying to do your job? It just seems very stressful to me.
I really understand his stress. I really, really understand his stress and his frustrations, but he is really taking it out on the wrong people. I just thought it was, I mean, he's basically throwing tantrums. He's throwing tantrums in the workplace. And I just thought it was really funny how Jenny just keeps being like, okay, whatever, like rolling her eyes and just being like, that's fine.
I also forgot to mention the fact that on top of doing his job, he's also being told to not do his job and being constantly reminded about how he's getting older and his body is breaking down. And while I like a lot of the old man jokes that they do and have done throughout the season, it was really difficult to see all of these things kind of converging on Mike at once. And Al's constant mentioning of Kale and just Mike getting pulled out of the game and then having talks about being traded. I don't know. It was a really difficult episode to watch Mike navigate, in my opinion.
Mike getting pulled out of the game, he needs to take his own advice. It's not all about you. Like, that's fine. And he is getting old. Like, that's just a fact. And everyone is just being cute about it and making fun jokes. Like, he just needs to get over that. But it is really hard, I think. And he also makes a lot of money. So I have, like, less sympathy than I do other people. But it is very hard, I think, to feel very invested in your job and feel like you want to give it everything you've got. And then to feel like people don't appreciate you, which I think is what he feels, obviously, when Oscar is like, so are you going to leave? So you're going to leave? Can you leave?
Yeah, I think it's like a mix of ego and betrayal. Like, obviously, his ego is bruised that this new young guy is coming and taking his spot. And he's not seen as like the top player that he has been seen as. But also, he's shown so much loyalty to the Padres, and he's gotten to a place where that actually means something, where he has the no trade clause, and that same loyalty doesn't seem to be being shown to him. So I think it's just a really hard place all around for him to be in. So I get why he's so hurt, but yeah, he's been so good at offering advice to all of the other players all season that it's a little disappointing that he can't take his own, but at the same time.
He memorized the last time there was a game canceled due to rain. Like, he knows so much about the Padres and invested so much into it. And that, I think, gets taken for granted a lot.
I like what Al said, and I think that speaks a lot to Mike's actual value on the team that I think some of the other people maybe aren't seeing. Like, Al values having Mike there so much, just like in the clubhouse, because of the leader that he is, which isn't exactly what everyone else is seeing in terms of the bottom line. So I think that helps kind of lend validation to what Mike's going through.
Yeah, and him being a leader is constantly being leaned on. And it's good that he gets recognized for that, especially from Al, because Al is great. But even in the locker room, when they're in the middle of a rain delay and Mike is stressing about his own stuff, Blip knows what he's sort of stressing about, but then still calls upon Mike to give the team a like rousing pep talk, because this is a game they could win and they are very much still in the running for the wild card. And kind of he does it out of habit, because that's what Mike does, because he is that leader, because he is constantly doing these pep talks. And so I think it's really interesting, like, that some things that Mike does are acknowledged while others are just kind of taken for granted.
But Blip doesn't want him to give a speech.
I thought he said he did.
No, he says he doesn't want to hear another one. And then he wants him to hold the kangaroo court.
Yeah, well, he said no one is more tired of them than me.
Then I take back everything I said, but I do want to talk about the kangaroo court. So thank you for doing my segue for me. Because I think the kangaroo court was one of the most entertaining aspects of this episode. At least this is where the majority of the hijinks came through. And surprisingly, while a lot of things in this episode are things I remembered about Pitch, the kangaroo court was not. So how did that play with everybody?
I love the kangaroo court. I think it's really fun. Yeah, I don't have strong feelings on the kangaroo court. It's fun. I like what it reveals.
And my question is, for the kangaroo court, like, do they have this jar just sitting around the locker room that they constantly put these random things into until the next kangaroo court?
I thought they did, but then I saw this time around, aren't they like putting papers in at the beginning? Like, when they're like kangaroo court, and then he has like a jar and people are putting papers in the jar.
They definitely put papers in the jar at the beginning, yeah. But I guess there could still be some building up over time. Yes. And do they actually have to pay the money that they were fined? And where does that money go to?
I would love it if they did. And I would say pizza party. But that's just me,
because I like pizza party. Yeah. That's a good idea. We can hold a rewatchable kangaroo court for a pizza party.
I would be so down.
Did anybody... I have a question for you guys regarding the kangaroo court. When he accuses Ginny of not running when she wasn't supposed to, and she's like, no, you just didn't see the sign. Who did you actually think was right before you found out the real answer?
Well, I'm still unclear on the real answer, and I I thought Ginny was right, and then the guy backed her up, but then maybe the guy only backed her up because he liked her. So
I have an answer because I've seen this episode 12 million times. Okay. But I also thought Ginny was right until it was revealed she wasn't. So what actually happened, because I also researched how does this play work? Because I don't know anything and was very confused. So Ginny was on second. Omar was on first. Mike was at bat. So she started running. She tried to steal third. And when she started running, because she thought she saw Buck give the sign to steal third. So she runs to steal third. Omar is like, oh my God, Jenny's so hot. He's watching her instead of watching Mike. So she starts running. So he's like, so he starts running. So they both ran to steal their base because Ginny thought she saw Buck. Buck did not give a sign because Mike says, whenever there's a pitcher on base, you never steal because pitchers are not good at running and they're typically not good. That's not what they're good at. They're good at pitching. They're not supposed to be good at batting. So he said, Buck would never say that to you. So that's what happened.
Thanks for the breakdown.
But I also believe Ginny. I was like, ooh, Ginny came with the receipts. But no, it turns out.
Yeah, Mike was just so hot-headed in this episode. I was ready to not believe him. But I guess Ginny has been hot-headed in the past. So they're kind of on even playing field.
She's just a rookie. I mean, he threw a tantrum once again.
like a huge tantrum in front of the entire team. And then even when they broke out to just being the two of them, it was quite the tantrum. But I did like how Ginny kind of took it in stride and didn't take full offense to it because she perhaps knows Mike at this point as well as Mike knows her. Which I find really interesting.
I hated his tantrums. I thought they were really inappropriate, and I would hate to be with a man who does that, who just has outbursts when he gets angry. But something that I felt in this episode, I feel like you really see why Ginny and Mike would be good long-term in my shipper's heart, because she takes it in such stride. She's just like, okay, whatever. Go cool down. This isn't about me. You have your own things to work out.
And I think if this would have happened earlier in the season when she was still trying to find her place with the rest of the team, that she may have had a different reaction. But now that she's feeling more confident in herself and more sure of her place and knows the Mike Lawson much better. Yeah, it's really interesting just to see how she deals with that outburst, which I don't like it either, but I liked her reaction to it. And then later in the episode, we come to find out, like you had mentioned, the other player who sided with Ginny actually thinks he has a huge crush on Ginny. And that whole scene was just so funny because, of course, he's going to have a crush on the attractive girl at their work, but then also think that he's in love. That it's not just schoolboys, it's also grown
men.
That's
what I love about it. Because he doesn't come up and he's like obviously half of them probably have a crush on her. She's very cute and very fun. But that he's like, no, I have real feelings. That's what makes it so funny.
And also when he was like, have you guys not noticed? She's a supermodel. I feel like he does think this is a unique thing that he's going through. Him and Ginny are meant to be.
Yes. He's like, we're soulmates.
Yeah, he's the only one that sees it. And then her two dads have to sit him down and tell him no. Basically.
Yeah, that
or
was
big
adorable.
Brothers. Big brothers, maybe. But I also really enjoyed all of the things that Mike was listing about Ginny that other people don't know that he does. To the point where I think all of the things that he listed about Ginny were things that we haven't seen or that we don't know about her either.
That Blip doesn't know about her.
That too. And Blip's known her longer.
Oh my God, Blip's face during this. He was just like, what is happening right now? What are you doing? What are you saying?
I will say, when we started this rewatch, I could not remember the reasons why I thought there was potential between Mike and Ginny, because at the beginning, it just doesn't feel that way at all. But I think it's at this point where it really starts to hit, just in the way that he pays attention and then she pays attention to him, but they're not necessarily going after each other. But I think just knowing what tune she sings terribly and off key is just something very small, but not insignificant.
It was not that off key. She was doing fine.
It wasn't great. But
I would say it wasn't off key. It was just like a weird range. Like, why was she starting so high? I don't know. I just feel like it was the wrong tone for her, but it wasn't necessarily off key.
Yeah, I feel like she was hitting the notes. What does Mike know?
That's true.
He's besides everything singer. About Ginny.
Which begs the question then, I've been keeping tabs, I think, Kendra, on how you're feeling about the two of them. And where do you stand now after Katy Perry's Firework?
This one, it obviously was very cute. It wasn't as squeal-worthy as some other moments, like the late-night phone call. And I think when they were talking right after she talked to her ex-boyfriend, I think both of those got me a little more in the feels. But this one, I guess this one is where you kind of see Mike realize what he's feeling. So that part was really cute. So I'm still fully on board Mike and Ginny. And the fact that he's now, well, ugh, he realized it and then made a decision that kind of made it less likely to happen. So that's confusing, but I don't know, maybe it actually makes it more likely to happen because he's on a different team now. I'm confused, but I'm here for it all.
Kendra, I feel like we're always on the same plane with Mike and Ginny, or maybe I'm just like reacting to your brilliant insights, but like I've always felt like when the whole pitch news came out last week and I was liking 1 million different tweets, this scene where he tells on himself that I stole that from someone else. But I kept seeing that get retweeted and people being like, oh, this is one of the most romantic moments in television ever. Even when I saw it back in the day, for me, it was not. I still don't think it's their best scene that we've seen so far. It's cute, but I also feel like even at that scene, like when he's looking at her, when she's singing Firework, I still get a little bit of my duckling vibes. Like he's very fond of her and I think he's really gonna miss her, but it's not as strong romantic vibes as I've gotten in other places or even other scenes in this episode. Like I get stronger vibes when he's getting mad that she's flirting with LaVon.
Yeah, I was just saying the same thing. Like his jealousy in this episode was way more telling than what he said.
What do you think what do you think it was about how Ginny reacted to him or about how he reacted to his own knowledge of Ginny-isms that made him finally decide at the end of the episode that he wants to go to Chicago? I mean, because obviously I think it's clear that she very much plays a role in this somehow, because we see him sort of, I don't know. To me, it feels like he is very much wanting to stay, or it looks that way in his his interactions with Ginny. And then he turns around and he's like, I want to go to Chicago, or like Chicago would be the team. So what do you think it is about that interaction that would kind of push him?
I think it either has to be that he's scared of his feelings and wants to run away from them, or he's moving elsewhere to give it a chance. And I don't know which one it is, but I unfortunately feel like the second one's unlikely, but I don't know, maybe not. It just seems like they're so busy. Like, how would that even happen if you were on a different team? Like, how would you even date someone on a different team? It seems impossible.
Mm-hmm.
I would just like us to remember this question and to ask it again.
Ooh.
Ah. I sincerely don't remember. But I, Kendra, I'm leaning the same way that you are. I'm leaning like the typical, stereotypical, I would say, guy reaction where they're running away from it.
If I'm being honest and like not taking into account anything else, I kind of got the sense that it was like you know, when he gives her the advice, he's like, do this. And he goes, because he's going to think you're scared. And she's like, I'm not scared. I get the sense that it's like, she's going to be okay. They're all going to be okay. It's okay for me to want this thing for myself, which is the ring. Like, it's okay for me to want something for myself and step away because they're all going to be okay.
That's interesting.
But I obviously like the shipper stuff too.
So you think he's choosing the ring over the Padres?
Yeah, and that's what Blip says earlier in the episode when he's like, you know, he's been here for 15 years. He's an all-star player. And he doesn't have a ring.
Okay.
Interesting. I will make a note to ask that question again, though. But I like that thought. I like the thought that they're going to be okay, especially because we do see Ginny and LaVon hanging out. Not really hanging out, but like being productive and talking shop, and everything looks good there.
Can we talk about LaVon, please?
Yeah.
Because I'm obsessed with him.
Yeah, let's do it. I wasn't going to do it too much in this episode because he wasn't around much, but I saw...
No, he's so great. And also, I think this is like the most we will see of him ever again, probably, because the series is ending. So I just want to say that I love LaVon, and I know other people don't feel the same way, but I think he's fun. And I just love his and Ginny's dynamic in this episode once again. And I am wishing if we went on for 7 seasons, I think they would continue to be fun. And I really like the trope of, like, I love how they're so flirty with each other, but there's, like, no tension whatsoever. Like, it's so platonic in every way, even though they are very flirty. And that's probably one of my favorite tropes, when people are flirty and you also know that they're never, they have zero feelings.
Yeah, I also really like their dynamic. I think they're flirty in, like, a teammate way, which is cute, because, like, I think it's hard for Ginny to get that dynamic with her teammates because of the little bit of weirdness yes. that's in there.
Kendra, they're flirty the way Blip is like saying that that guy had pretty eyes.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought it was absolutely hilarious that he pretended that he didn't speak English so he didn't have to talk to the press.
I think if anything, this episode shows me the character longevity, Ariana, that you were talking about in our last podcast episode. I feel like this episode, with what little we see of LaVon, shows me where he could have gone in the future more so than the previous episode did. Because I didn't like him all that much in the last episode, but I really do like him here.
In that other way of, I know last week I was going on and on about how he is one of the only people I feel like treats Ginny like an equal intellectually. Like, I feel like he's the only person who isn't afraid to flirt with her. Like, everyone else is just like, yes, you're just like us. And he feels so secure in, I don't know, like, who he is. He's just like, yeah, I'll flirt with you. I'll flirt with anyone. But also, I love what we found out about, like, his girlfriend, that he has a girlfriend back in Havana, that he actually isn't taking advantage of all of his new groupies, because he's loyal to his girlfriend. But I also thought it was interesting that he like left her, and he's like, yeah, because, you know, baseball's the only thing that matters. And he's like, you get that, Ginny. And it's a very, again, showing like their age, like they're so young, they do still feel like baseball is the only thing that matters, versus like Mike, who's old and is like, I have no life, Al. I just want my wife to love me.
I don't want Kale to be my future, Al. Please help me. No, I thought that was an interesting scene too. And I don't know, a sort of gem of a character moment in an episode that doesn't even really focus on LaVon. So I thought that was lovely. I do want to put a pin in Mike and everything that's kind of going on there and going on with LaVon, and turn to Oscar and Charlie and the rest of the stuff that was going on in this episode. So in addition to running around and trying to get Mike to think that he needs to leave the Padres, Oscar is also having to deal with Charlie, the guy in the front office, who is just very demanding and not completely understanding how baseball works and the management side of it and just what goes into managing a whole stadium. We get to see a lot more of that sort of Charlie that we've seen glimpses of up until this point. And Brittany, I know that before we started recording, you had some very strong opinions, maybe not necessarily about Charlie, but sort of about Charlie at the same time and what he surrounds himself with in his office.
Yeah. So Charlie, who, like you were saying, has a lot of opinions and knows a lot of numbers, but doesn't exactly understand the inner workings of how to run an organization and keep everybody at least comfortable, if not happy, has probably one of the worst possible things in his office, which annoyed me. And I watched this episode twice and it annoyed me both times. And that is, he has the stupidest mini fridge in his office. It's like sitting on top of a credenza. It's probably could only hold a can of soda and a bottle of water. And he pulls a bottle of water out of it. And I'm like, well, now you have no water for the rest of the day unless someone comes in and restocks because you used the only bottle of water that'll fit in there. And it just drove me insane of how stupid that mini fridge was. And he could probably refund someone's ticket with the amount of money that it costs. So that's what, 42,004 tickets he has to refund instead of five? Just ridiculous.
I have an important question for you, Brittany. A baseball question.
Sure.
It could also be a mini fridge question follow up. But so he says that they only need 10 minutes to play to finish the game. Why?
Okay, so they left it the fourth inning, I think they said. And in order for a game to count, so you play nine innings. So if a team is up in the fifth and they're going to call the game because they can't get back on the field, then you've at least played like an odd number of innings. It's like you have to get over the halfway point. So right now they're at the exact, like they need, it's just a rule. Five innings apparently gives everyone enough time. So if they go back out and it's the top of the fifth and Ginny throws, like, you know, throws out three people, you know, or like gets like one person on base and then they get a double play or something, it could take only 10 minutes for them to get them out.
That makes sense now. I was just confused because they did say four and I was like, you still have five innings. How is that going to be 10 minutes?
Yeah.
That makes sense if they only have to get one more inning in.
Yeah. And then that's why it was important for him to talk to Russell and get to the umpires beforehand, because they basically wanted Russell to say, oh, yeah, it's fine. They can go out and play and then come back and be able to say, okay, the field's in bad position, like bad shape. You can't play anymore. That way they could definitely have a hard cut of the game. So they wanted it to A, get the field done as quickly as possible, and then B, make sure that, like, you know, oh, shucks, you know, we're going to have to call the game after five.
And talking to the umpires is bad, right?
Like, yeah, you don't want to do that. You also probably don't want to talk to Russell, as we saw.
Yeah, basically Charlie was wrong in every single way that he wanted to go about things. And I definitely think Oscar picked his battles well. But yeah, you definitely don't want to talk to the umpires. A lot of times you can get in trouble for doing so. And the groundskeeper obviously was not very happy to be pressured. But I did like at the end, or like when Oscar promised that they were going to go talk to the umpires, that he took Charlie to the batting cage instead and kind of had him there. I think Oscar has a really good way with people. And every time where I think I might get disappointed in Oscar, he surprises me. And I'm not sure why I'm surprised anymore that he is a decent person. And that he's actually good at his job, but also good at reading people. I don't know. Does he, Diana, I know you like him a lot.
He's my favorite.
He's your favorite. Does he surprise you in that same way? Or do you have more faith in him, I guess, than I do? I think I know the answer to this, but.
I mean, I have a lot of faith in him. I feel like he deserves everything good in this world. there are some things I wish he handled better. Like, I wish he was more upfront to Mike about how he wants him to stay. Like, I know he does say it, but I just wish he said it. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't matter how he says it, because he has to do his job, and he is doing his job, and he's good at his job. So, yeah. I mean, he deserves all nice things, which is why I'm glad he's dating Al's daughter, who seems great and brilliant and beautiful, just like Al said she was. And for sure, a better match, I think, than Amelia, even though we've only seen her in two scenes.
Yeah, she was super cute. Kendra, do you have... I know that you were kind of coming off of your Riverdale vibes. How do you feel about Oscar and the ways he handles things? Do you kind of mistrust him a little bit like I do? Or are you more in line with Ariana?
I don't think I mistrust him. Like, I think I agree that he's doing his job. I thought one good thing that this episode did for everyone except Charlie was make everyone look really good at their jobs, because there's truly nothing in this world more infuriating than someone new coming into a workplace and trying to tell everyone else how to do their job that they've been doing for years. That's exactly what he did. And everyone just remained so confident in what they knew how to do and what they were doing. And that includes Oscar. You kind of see him bending to Charlie a little bit, but at like, he's his boss. He kind of has to do what he wants to an extent. So I'm getting pro Oscar slowly but surely.
Forgetting those Riverdale vibes, which is nice. It's nice to hear. Yeah, that was basically the episode. I think we touched on a lot of it, including Oscar secretly dating Al's, as Ariana puts it, brilliant doctor daughter, who just happens to be beautiful. And that's, I believe, how Al says it too at the second episode or something, right? That sounds about right. Well, then let's put a pin in the discussion for now and move into our favorite scenes and favorite lines for this episode. My favorite scene was Mike and Blip's interrogation of that other player's feelings for Ginny, because I liked their sort of big brother vibes and just the way in which that player was just ridiculous and little boy-like rather than a grown man. I thought it was hilarious. Kendra, what was your favorite scene?
He was cute, though. I have a soft spot for him.
Yes, he was cute. He wasn't gross in the ways in which he was talking about Ginny. Yeah, he was cute.
He thinks he's in love.
Yes, yes. Kendra, your favorite scene, please.
I liked Mike and Ginny in the gym when she was warming up and he was realizing that he loved her. I think it just kind of showed how far their relationship has come, and she sang Firework better than I thought she was going to based on what he said.
Sure. No, I liked that too. I thought it was a cute moment. Ariana, your favorite scene, please.
This is really just like a tie on to your scene, but I just wanted to point out that Blip's face when Mike tells on himself is so great, and I'm obsessed with it. He's so confused and horrified.
And also, it kind of read like, how did I not know this?
Yes.
Which I liked.
A separate scene would be, I just loved Levon and Ginny being cute this episode. I loved like how they would walk in and you would see them being like, just like making a joke and flirting, and her being like, well, we got to get to work, and him being like, oh, you worry too much. And then Mike being like, throwing a towel and being like, oh, you get so mad because she can have a proper working relationship with someone else.
Yeah, imagine that. It's funny you chose this one as your like alternate, because this is what I put down originally before the one that I ended up going with. So we're on a level. Brittany, your favorite scene, please.
Mine was when Oscar takes the annoying man to the batting cages, because it just shows how good at his job he is. He got everyone towels. He got them hot chocolate. He got them all set up. He was able to make out with his, you know, girlfriend / secret lover. And, you know, he smoothed everything over with everyone. So he really checked off a lot more boxes than I'm able to do in a single day in like an hour. So good for him.
Yes. And I forgot about the hot chocolate. That was a nice touch of his. Thank you for reminding us of that. And in terms of favorite lines, mine was Mike's at the very beginning of the episode where he says, "We'll get rained out before I ever leave San Diego." And it's less so the line and more of the fact that they see the raindrops come and then both he and his agent kind of like look up at the sky. And I don't know. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was entertaining.
You guys, what was up with this agent?
He was weird.
I guess it was just interesting to see like a sports agent versus Amelia. Because I guess, I don't know, what's his incentive for Mike leaving? He still makes the same amount of money.
He might make more, though, if he is on a World Series winning team. Because anybody who makes the playoffs makes more, I believe. And then the further in the playoffs you go, you make more money. So perhaps there's something in his contract that says the agent would make more as Mike makes more. Maybe. I don't know. Kendra, your favorite line, please.
Another line by Oscar, so I'm really coming around. So it was when he said to his GF, "How'd you know about Mike?" And she said, "We talked about it." And he said, "Oh yeah, I need to stop doing that." Amelia's not the only one letting things slip to her significant other.
Fair point. That's a good point. I like that. Ariana, your favorite line.
I feel like he feels more comfortable doing it because she is Al's daughter, and so she knows already like the clubhouse, and she knows all of these people, and she knows where all of the secret cameras are. My favorite line was more so the delivery in terms of the dismissive way that Mike says, "Omar, you have a crush."
So good. And Brittany, take us home with your favorite line, please.
So we've talked about this to death, but I'll just read the line of the scene that it's from, and that is, "That's how off-key she is, but if you listen carefully, it's the worst rendition of Firework you've ever heard."
It's definitely not the best rendition I've ever heard, but that was a great line. Thanks, Brittany. Well, those were the favorite scenes and favorite lines that we had from this episode, as well as our thoughts about what happened. And we want to hear what you have to say, so please do contact us. We love hearing from our listeners. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. You can come find us on Facebook. We're on Facebook at Rewatchables Rewinders. Look for a cover photo of Ginny and you will know that you are in the right place. We would love to talk about this episode, this series in general, and any of the other series that we've covered so far. There's always Avatar stuff going up in the group that makes me smile, even though I personally have no context for it. So if you like anything that we have watched so far, please do join our Facebook group and come chat with us. And then also, if you have a second, if you could rate us on iTunes, that would be really helpful. A 5-star review will help people be able to find us, and we can grow our listener base and have even more listener feedback and just a lot of more fun things for everybody. So please do rate us on iTunes. And as always, we do have an incentive for anyone who does. This week, if you rate us 5 stars on iTunes, then Karen will name all the reasons why she's definitely 100% not in love with you. And she is a writer by nature, so she will have a lot of really great reasons that you'll probably want to hear. So please do rate us on iTunes. Before we head out today, we do have a little bit of listener feedback, and we have some tweets from our friend Kevin to the point where I think we're maybe going to rename this portion Kevin's Corner. Brittany, would you like to speak to Kevin's tweets?
Sure. So Kevin gave us a couple of tweets on our last episode, and Adriana's done a nice job of just consolidating them, so we're not going to read them verbatim, but we were able to discover that Sonny's actually been around. We talked about him a little bit in the last episode, and he was one of the guys with them at the bar in the pilot. So a good friend to the crew, a good reminder to have that, you know, he's been around and didn't just get that, you know, one paycheck for the series. So good on him. And Mike also went to Rachel's to pick up boxes earlier in the season, which strongly suggests that he lived there. That was another question that we were kind of going back and forth on, of whether he lived in that house or they lived somewhere else. And then moved to separate houses after their divorce. So that does clear that up a little bit. And I actually forgot that he was picking there to pick up boxes and wasn't just going through their wedding photos, unless she was just getting rid of those boxes, but whatever. Also, there is an article that Kevin tweeted at us, which luckily I did not just click on today because I almost did, but it was about the fact that Pitch was almost revived and there were talks about it last year. I believe the headline was mentioned Disney. And so it almost happened, didn't happen. If you check out the replies to our latest tweet about the episode 107, you will be able to see that article, but newbies do not read the article yet. Yes,
I did read the article. And so I was, when I read it, I was like, oh my God, newbies do not read it. It spoils the last episode heavily.
Oh, I'm really glad I did not just click it today because I was so like,
do
oh,
not click on it. But basically what it says, it's kind of like what people had already, it confirms what people already suspected, that when Dan Fogelman was tweeting about Pitch and he was like, oh, I miss my old office. And it was like the Padres stadium. And people were saying, oh, I want, like there was rumors that he was trying to negotiate Pitch getting picked up again because he was redoing his contract. And he's obviously worth a ton of money because This Is Us is huge. And so one of the incentives for renewing his contract at 20th Century was that they would, that he wouldn't have to pitch again, that they were just going to full on sell it, that they were, it was already, so they already had started a writer's room. They had already gotten the actors like on board, like I keep wanting to say their names. I'll just say their fake names. Like Jenny and Mike were on board. And it was all set to go, and they thought it was going to go to Disney Plus. But then, obviously, Disney Plus decided that it was too mature for their audience because, obviously, like they're doing, like they're basically like a glorified Disney Channel, and so it fell through. And that's a real bummer. So, you guys, Pitch could happen. It's unlikely, but it could.
Well, potentially, now that it's on Hulu and Disney controls Hulu and things that goes on it, maybe this could be a more successful Lizzie McGuire situation where it'll just go to Hulu instead of Disney Plus. One can only hope, right?
I don't understand why Lizzie McGuire isn't on Hulu. It's so stupid. They're losing out on money here.
All right. Well, thank you, as always, Kevin, for writing in and tweeting at us. We really enjoy your tweets and your insights. And everyone else, please do also contact us. We would love to hear from you. Before we go, we do want to look forward to the next episode that we have. It's the penultimate episode of the season as well as the series. And that episode is episode 9, Scratched. And so it's now time for Brittany's brainstorms and Kendra's creeping suspicions. What do you think is going to happen?
I hope it's not that like something to do with like Ginny being once again sidelined for something, because I feel like we've seen enough of her, you know, either being told like, oh, you're being pulled from the game because like the delay is too long, or oh, we've 2 days off in 10 days, so you know, we're skipping you in the rotation, or oh, we're actually not going to start you, like I just don't want another storyline about that. So yeah, I hope it's not that she gets, I guess, scratched from the lineup or something. But then maybe that also could apply to Mike. I don't know. Or a deal. I'm not really too familiar with how this term is used in baseball. So I have a feeling that it's something, but I don't want to look it up. So I know what beanball is, but I apparently don't know what scratch is. So
is there any circumstance of like games not counting or like plays not counting in the MLB? Is that what it could mean?
Maybe. I like that, especially as we're coming down the stretch of, you know, making it whether or not this team will make it to the wild card. It could have something to do with it.
Okay. So maybe that. And other than that, I feel like there's probably going to be some fallout from Mike's decision to go to Chicago.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be no avoiding it in the locker room or, you know, in those sports pundit scenes that we have that play over everything. So it'll be interesting to see what the team takes away from it.
Yeah, I really hope he just won't be gone. At the very least, we need one last Mike locker room speech.
Even if he doesn't want to give it and Blip doesn't want to hear it.
Yeah.
All sounds good. I'm excited to see what, if any of that happens in the next episode. But until then, until we are back again to talk about episode 9, Scratched, I'm Danielle.
I'm Kendra.
I'm Mariana.
And I'm Brittany.
Talk to you later, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.